Today's reading is from Luke. Then they arrived at the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. As he stepped out on land, a man of the city who had demons met him. For a long time he had worn no clothes, and he did not live in a house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he fell down before him and shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For Jesus had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many times it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles, but he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the wilds. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" He said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. They begged him not to order them to go back into the abyss. Now there on the hillside, a large herd of swine was feeding, and the demons begged Jesus to let them enter these, so he gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and drowned. When the swineherd saw what had happened, they ran off and told it in the city and in the country. Then people came out to see what had happened, and when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in the right mind. And they were afraid. Those who had seen it told them how the one who had been possessed by demons had been healed. Then all of the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them, for they were seized with a great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. The man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." So he went away, proclaiming throughout the city how much Jesus had done for him. The word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. That was very well done, wasn't it? Good job reading this morning. I invite you to take out of your bulletin this morning a couple of things. First, your shoe prayer, and also your sermon outline for this morning as we go through the message today. Your shoe prayer, as we've been using each week in this series, thinking about our vision as a church going forward this year and the decade ahead. We've had prayers to go in different shoes we wear. This is for what we call work boots, or whatever kind of shoes you wear when you're out doing work you're going to get dirty doing. And sometimes that kind of work is what we do through the church and some of our outreach work. We go and we're willing to get dirty and messy doing that work. And today's shoe prayer fits the thought of our theme this morning very well. I want to pick up on a statement we used last week when we started with that nine-dot test. And we said that when we are willing to change the way we see things, the things we see change. Or to put it in the second person, when you change the way you see things, the things you see will change. Sometimes that's not easy to do. Take a look at this picture. This picture has not been altered in any way. Everything in it's real. The rock, the water, the trees, the sky. But it doesn't make sense, does it? Something looks very different, weird, strange about this picture if everything in it is just as it is. Until you turn the picture right side up. And then it makes sense. And then it makes sense. In this 2020 Vision series, we're considering a story today that on the surface looks strange, looks weird, looks even frightening, until Jesus shows the ability to see the scene differently and turn the picture upright. As we pointed out in this series, we're not talking about a vision for the church that's about where we're going to go or something that we're going to build or what kind of programs we're going to do in the future. We're really talking about a vision of who we're becoming, the kind of people God is shaping us into. Who are we to be in the future? Today, we consider in this story a vision of people who care deeply and do something about the needs of our community. Now, as we've also been talking about in this series, we're using a metaphor of Jesus, going the extra mile. In each of the stories we looked at so far, there are people who go the extra mile, and we're going to look at people today who go the extra mile. In fact, a couple of different groups. And we're going to talk about what does it mean to go the extra mile for those people. And then at the end, say, based on this story, what does it mean for us? What does this story say about the way we should go the extra mile? So let's start with the disciples. For the disciples, going the extra mile means going to places that are easy to avoid. Going to places that are easy to avoid. Listen again to how the story began. Then they, the disciples with Jesus, arrived at the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. Let's get an idea of what that means. This map shows the dimensions of the Sea of Galilee, north to south at the longest point, 13 miles, east to west at the widest point, just over 8 miles. The disciples with Jesus were traveling from that westward side, just north of the 8.1, and going in the opposite direction diagonally across the lake. They probably literally went some miles, maybe 10 to 12 miles. And when they got there, they only stayed a short amount of time, and then they went all the way back across the lake. Now that's a lot of traveling. That's a lot of work for what was a short time at the other side of the lake. Why would they do that? In the movie Remember the Titans, the story about the first year of racial integration in the T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia. The movie focuses on the football team that is living out all of the racial divide that's going on in the school and the community. Well, things start to get pretty volatile at the football camp, and one morning the coach tells them to get up at 3 a.m. and put on their running shoes. We're going running. He takes them off through the woods for miles and miles and miles. And when they finally stopped, do you remember where they stopped? Gettysburg. And he takes about 10 minutes to teach them a lesson about that place. And then he says, now let's go back. And they return. That's it. All that running for a 10-minute lesson. But that was a big lesson. It changed their lives. Today's story in the gospel is that kind of lesson. Jesus takes the disciples all the way across the water for a short amount of time because it was Jesus' ultimate aim that his mission in the world would not be exclusive to a particular race of people. That it would go to the nations. That it would go to the non-Jewish people, to the Gentiles. That mission started in this trip. But notice too that it says opposite Galilee, not just to the other side, not just to another part, opposite Galilee. Take a look at this next map. This is the Sea of Galilee and the regions around it in the day of Jesus. Now, the small bit of water in the middle is Galilee, the sea, but the region on the left side, the western side, called Galilee, is the Jewish region. That's where much of Jesus' ministry took place. He was born in one of the towns of Galilee called Nazareth. This was all Jewish. When you start traveling around the lake, you're going to go through different regions, the Tetrarch of Philip to the Decapolis. And these regions had firm boundaries that you would have to pass through, unless you're on water. Jesus goes from the Galilee side to the Decapolis side. The very name Decapolis means this is different. It's not a Hebrew word, it's a Greek word. We can guess what it means, can't we? Decapolis, the region of 10 cities. This is a Gentile region. What is a giveaway in this story that Jesus' disciples are in a different place now? What are the animals they see on the hillside? Pigs. Pigs. Ah, not pigs. Those are unclean animals to a Jewish person. You know, I wondered as I was working on the sermon this week if this might have been the first time that these disciples actually could see pigs up close and smell them. I can imagine they were in the boat before they ever got to shore going, what is that smell? That is why we don't eat these animals. They're dirty, they're filthy, they're unclean. They're obviously on the opposite side. Now, here's what's interesting about this. On the Sea of Galilee, you can see the other side of the lake almost any given day. When we've taken St. Luke's trips to the Holy Land, Bob Zara, who coordinates those trips, finds the most amazing hotels. We always stay at a hotel on that western Galilee side in Tiberias. And from that hotel, you can see the opposite side of the lake. Here's a picture I took on our last trip. I'm on the grounds of the hotel looking across the Sea of Galilee at the mountains of Jordan. That would have been, in Jesus' day, the region of the Decapolis. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. If you're the disciples, you have never been there. You don't know what it's like over there. But you can see it every day. Do you understand what that's like? Are there regions of Indianapolis that you drive by just about every day, but you maybe have never spent any time in those neighborhoods? To maybe say, I see that area of town all the time, but I don't really know what it would be like to live there. Maybe Jesus took the disciples over there because he understood that sometimes we have to get out of our world before we're willing to change the way we see things. We literally have to leave our world. When I was in high school, it was the era of busing, where kids in one part of town were bused to a school in another part of town. For me growing up, I changed school every 2 years. For a couple of years, I might go to a school near my house, another couple of years in the inner city. So in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, 9th and 10th grade high school at the time was at a school in an all-black area of town, very different from my world where I lived and spent most of my time, where every week driving in, looking through a school bus window, I would see many houses that were pretty poor, and one thing I thought is, boy, I'm glad I don't live here. It was at the foot of Winston-Salem State University, an all-black university, and the area schools of Winston-Salem would often hire education majors from Winston-Salem State to be assistant teachers and coaches. So I played on the JV basketball team my freshman year. I was the only white kid on the team. And we had an assistant coach from Winston-Salem State, and he told us, he said, "Now boys, if you ever have trouble getting to practice, call me." He gave us his phone number. "Call me, I'll come pick you up." Now, I know he wasn't thinking about the white boy on the team because all of the rest of my teammates lived within walking distance of the school. Well, during Christmas break, we practiced during the daytime. Both my parents were at work. I could not get to practice. I called my coach. He said, "Give him a call." I said, "Coach, I can't get to practice. Are you at all able to come pick me up?" He said, "Where do you live?" I told him. He said, "I'll be there in a little while." So he came, picked me up. Had this old car beat up, and wouldn't you know it, we get in the car to leave, it wouldn't start. He said, "Okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna roll my car, and then I'm gonna jump in and pop the clutch, and we're gonna jump start it, okay? Get out and help me push." And the whole time we're pushing the car to build up some speed, he is looking around like a nervous cat. I said, "What's wrong? Why are you so nervous?" He said, "You wouldn't understand. Keep pushing." We get the car started. We drive off. I said, "What was that back there?" He said, "Look, I'm a black guy in a white neighborhood. All I need is one of your neighbors to call the police because they want to know what's going on. Do you know what happens when the police show up? They don't just ask me, why am I there? They're going to take me down to the station. They're going to run a background check on me. By the time I leave the police station, guess what? I miss practice, and that's all it takes. One missed practice, and I lose that job. I can't afford to lose that job." Sometimes you got to get out of your world before you're able to change the way you see things. Well, the next group in the story that had to go an extra mile were the people on the side of the Decapolis. But let's bridge the gap. What happened? If the disciples were nervous when they smelled the pigs, imagine how nervous they were when the boat arrived on shore and the first person they see is a crazed lunatic charging at them. And Jesus gets out of the boat and he says to the man, "Come out of him," speaking not to the man, but the demons that possessed him. And the demons, who are named Legion, say to Jesus, "Don't throw us into the abyss, that place of darkness. Throw us in the pigs." So Jesus does, "Come out, go to the pigs." Demons go in the pigs, pigs rush into the sea, and they all die. Anybody remember how many pigs we're talking about? 2,000. What do you think the farmers think when they watch 2,000 of their herd just die? They run into town and start telling everybody else. The people in the town arrive on the scene. They see all their dead pigs. Now let's think about this for a moment. Who has to bear the loss of the pigs? It's probably not just the farmers. Don't you think the price of pork bellies just went up in the Decapolis after that day? It's going to be a price everybody probably has to pay. And they're looking now at this man who had been crazed out of his mind, sitting sanely at the feet of Jesus. And they've got a decision to make. So going the extra mile for the people of the town means accepting a sacrifice they did not choose to make. Accepting a sacrifice they didn't choose to make. This is what makes this story different from the others we've heard so far. And all the other stories, the people who go the extra mile chose to do it. The people did not choose to go the extra mile here. It was a decision that was made for them. They had no choice in it, and yet they had to sacrifice. Let's think about what happened before the man was healed. We're told some things about not just the man's condition, but the community. One of the things that we are told is he did not live in a house, but in the tombs. What did that mean? That meant he had no life. He had no future. He lived in a place where people are dead. This man has no future in his current condition. And then it says he was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles. Oh, in other words, the community invested and preserved the condition of that community, where it says we are okay with living in a place where some people don't have the same future as other people. We're okay with that. That's the way the world is. And we're invested in trying to keep it that way until Jesus comes along and messes all that up. What does going the extra mile mean for this community? It means being willing to not react so negatively to a change that they did not get to make, and to see if it turns out better for the community as a whole. That their personal sacrifice, nobody asked them. Jesus never called a town hall meeting and said, "You've obviously got somebody who needs help. I can help, but let me tell you what it's going to cost you. All in favor?" He never did that. He just did it. And now going the extra mile means I've got a choice to make. Am I going to react to my loss? Or am I going to pause and say, what might this loss turn out to mean? Could it be something that helps other people? Maybe I need to hold on just a minute. Do you understand that? Have you ever had decisions made that affected you? You didn't have a choice in them. Maybe a decision made in Washington, D.C. that's going to raise your taxes for a social good. And your reaction is, if it raises my taxes, there's nothing that can be good about it. Instead of going, now wait, what if? The community as a whole is helped the people had a choice, and what they chose to do was to tell Jesus, "Leave, please. Leave." They didn't wait. So what does it say for us? What does going the extra mile mean for us? Whenever you read the Gospels and there's a story about Jesus doing something with the disciples, that's a way of saying this is for the church. There's a lesson here for the church. There's something that the church is to learn from this because it's about Jesus and his community. What can we learn from it? Well, one thing I think obviously we can learn is that for us, going the extra mile means getting close to human needs different from our own. Getting close to human needs different from our own. That's what happened to the disciples. They were taken across the lake to get close to human needs that up until that day had remained at a distance which they only saw from a distance. Part of the thing I think it means to live this out is as a community of faith, it means that we're going to be a community that's willing to have conversation about the real hurts of our society, even if they sound political. If I've heard it once, I've heard it a thousand times. The church is no place for politics. And you know what? If that means talking about issues the way politicians do, I agree with it 100%. The church is no place for that kind of talk. It is no place for demonizing people. It's no place for proving who's right and who's wrong and dividing folks. No, none of us want that. But if talking about human issues of importance means that if they might sound political, we can't do that, we will lose our prophetic voice as the church. We will forfeit it away. And Jesus calls his disciples by the very nature of this story to be willing to be led into places of need, not their own. And that means just being open to talk about how is Jesus calling us to make a difference today. Something else it means is that we let God actually involve us in ministries that get us close. And that's what we're doing today at St. Luke's. If you've already been into the fellowship hall to get your donut and coffee, you notice there are a lot of tables that represent our five leading ministry partners in the community. They're here today to give all of us a chance to go and browse the tables and see if we might want to be involved in one of them, because they all need volunteers and they all need help. If you're not already involved in one, let me run through them with you real quick. The first is Fletcher Place. More than 25 years, St. Luke's has been responsible for preparing and serving two dinner meals per month and weekly breakfast at the near downtown shelter called Fletcher Place Community Center. And they always need volunteers to help cook, help clean up, help prepare and serve meals for the homeless and the needy. Stop by their table and see how you might engage in a way that fits your schedule and fits your availability. The other is Saul's Servants at Work. Servants at Work. Their mission is to build wheelchair ramps for people, but many of them would say that's not quite right. What we now are discovering we're in the business of is liberating people. The wheelchair ramps they build for people's homes, they are discovering, are allowing people to leave their homes for the first time in years. Sometimes, get this, decades. Can you imagine being in a wheelchair and not being able to leave your home in more than 10 years? And Saul's is setting people free. Now, Saul's always needs volunteers, but what they're saying right now is they really need skilled carpenters and engineers. People who can help train other volunteers. You might have a carpentry background. You might have skills there. They really need you. Crooked Creek Food Pantry, near 71st Street in Michigan, provides for nearly 2,000 people a week to shop for food. This requires 100 volunteers weekly to stock shelves, clean, make deliveries, and assist shoppers on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday mornings and afternoons. All the weekdays except Monday, two different shifts. And that might work with your schedule to do one shift, a morning or an afternoon, one day a week. You can stop and ask the volunteers at the Crooked Creek table what they need. Again, Haiti is one of our partners. For many years, since Dave and Jamelyn Williamson came here to St. Luke's, we've been involved in Zamni, Fondwa, and Haiti, and they have two mission trips coming up. One is just 1 month away, March 7th through 13th. March 7th through 13th. The other is April 4th through 11th. And that second trip is also going to be a spiritual retreat because it happens during Holy Week. So stop by the Fondwa table, see what needs they have coming up, maybe things that you can do here to support others. And then Project Transformation. PT is a United Methodist mission that works for literacy development of inner city kids during the summertime, when other kids have a chance to go to camps and continue learning and growing. For many inner city kids, they don't have those opportunities. PT provides a weekday morning, afternoon experience for kids in the inner city, which college students come in as interns to help run. Here's how they need help from local churches. They need volunteers to make meals to take to the interns at night. They need people who will do daily reading with kids, go down and sit one-on-one with a kid and help them in their reading. And they need volunteers all summer. Now, this one is just in the summertime, but what a great opportunity to go and find out, as you think about your summer, how you can help. My daughter, Sarah Fuque, brought Project Transformation to Indianapolis. So Sarah's going to be at the table this morning. Stop by there. So surely, going the extra mile means we're willing to let Jesus get us close to need. But something else it means. Something else in one of my notes that I wrote here so carefully this morning. Here's what else it means. Doing what we can for what can be. Doing what we can for what can be. On the outside, people saw a crazed lunatic. Out of his mind. It was an upside down picture. It made no sense. Something to be afraid of. Jesus saw a man needing help. And Jesus did what he could for what could be, for who the man could become. The man got healed. When he wanted to come with Jesus, said, "I wish I could take you, but I know the kind of welcome you're going to receive on the other side of the lake. I know how people there will think of you. Just do this. Stay here and go throughout the towns of the Decapolis and tell them what God has done." He saw what could be. Pastor Javon shared a thought about this passage I thought was very powerful. He said, when the demons left the man and they went into the pigs, what did they do? They killed the pigs. Why didn't they kill the man? Because the man was fighting back. What people saw on the outside of this man is what he looked like when he was fighting a demon on the inside every day, fighting for his life. He looked like a crazed lunatic to them, but inside, he's just a man fighting to survive. That's what Jesus saw. And he liberated the fighter. Oh, what does it look like when the church does what they can for what can be? Paul Nixon wrote an introduction to a book that's coming out pretty soon. I read it the other day. He tells a story about St. John's Methodist Church that was started by Rudy Rasmus. It's in the inner city of Houston. 3 weeks from today, mark your calendars, Rudy Rasmus is going to be here preaching that morning. You do not want to miss that Sunday. Invite all your relatives and your neighbors and everybody you know. You don't want to miss. It's going to be an awesome Sunday. Rudy Rasmus will be here. Well, Paul Nixon tells in this story, standing in line to get into St. John's Church one Sunday morning. Now, that says a lot, doesn't it? A church, you got to stand in line just to get inside. He's waiting in line. He notices the woman in front of him holding a young child. He gets into a conversation with her. She said, "Today's my first Sunday here." He goes, "Well, that's exciting. Did you just move here?" She said, "No, I just got out of prison." He said, "You just got out of prison?" She said, "Yeah." And lo and behold, 90 minutes later, she made her first profession of faith in that service. He's asking her in line, if you just got out of prison, why are you choosing on this Sunday morning to come here? She said, because the people of this church came to see me when I was in prison. They came to see me before I changed. They came to see me when I was still this angry, violent, hurting girl, and they loved me. That's why I'm here today. It's a cool thing when the church loves like that. Amen. Amen.